Good afternoon. So today we're going to move on to our next topic, which is now that we know how to build a processor, about designing a faster processor than the one we have. We're going to talk about a concept called pipelining, which is probably the easiest and one of the most effective ways of making a processor design like what we started with much faster. First, some logistics notes. So the exam is graded, the scores are in the gradebook. The key is on Colab under the resources folder. You can view your exam and submit regrade requests via TPEGS. I would note that there are two questions which we dropped, which were listed as dropped on the key, where there's a score on the question for on TPEGS, but we took the per question data from TPEGS and removed the two questions and added up the points and used that to compute the score that's on the gradebook. And that's the distribution there, median about 83.5 and so on. Also, like to mention, so you had a lab yesterday, which hopefully you all did. There's a homework which is builds on that, that's due next Wednesday. Okay, any logistics questions? Great. So let's talk about pipelining. And rather than starting by talking about processors and circuits, I'm going to talk about something which is sort of a more human task. That's doing laundry. So I have two loads of laundry to do, let's say. So what I can do is I can take my whites, put them in the washer, wait for that to finish, then take that out, put it in the dryer, wait for that to finish, then take it out, fold all my lighter clothing, then put my color dark clothing in the washer, then put it in the dryer, then take it out and actually fold it. So does this seem like a way, did any of you actually do laundry if you have two loads to do? So you're shaking your hand. So what do you do instead? Yeah, you don't say, gosh, I'm just done with the washer now. I guess I'm gonna wait until I finish this whole thing. Instead, you're gonna do something where you say, yep, I'm done with the washer, now I'm gonna take my other load, and in the same amount of time, now I can do like three loads of laundry instead of just two. By just noticing that, hey, I'm not really using the washer all the time and the dryer all the time, I should actually make full use of that. And this is sort of the basic idea of pipelining, that we have this sort of pipe, like an assembly line, we do one step with one thing and pass it on to the next step, and then we can use that first component, the washer in this case, to do the next step immediately, even though we're not completely done with our first load. But we can start something earlier. Okay. So this is the basic idea of pipelining, that we're gonna have parts of our processor where we're done using it very quickly, and we can start using it for, in our case of our processor, the next instruction, not the next load, and that's gonna make us do more work in total. Per a unit time. We're going to get better efficiency. And I know that this isn't perfect. We aren't like getting maximum possible usage out of our washer and dryer by doing this. So one thing you'll notice is that we have some wasted time. And that wasted time comes because not all of our components here, not the washer and dryer, and folding the clothes doesn't take the same amount of time. And that means that we don't have everything quite balanced, so we're gonna have some time when even though we have all this work to do, we're gonna not be using our washer because we're waiting on the dryer because it's the slowest thing in this picture. And if you actually know how washers and dryers work, you might know the picture probably looks more like this. Now that we have this component which is much slower, and that's what we're really waiting on. And this shows us sort of the trade-off of doing this pipelining thing. If my goal was to get a load of laundry done as fast as possible, using this sort of mechanism is not going to do that. Because if we look at the amount of time, once I start getting going, it takes me to do a single load, that includes this wasted time. I needed to wait for the dryer to become free from the previous load. So as far as the amount of time it takes each load to get done, it's slower. But in exchange for taking more time from the time I start doing a load of laundry to when I finish, I'm completing more loads of laundry. I'm getting more work done in total, but each piece of work is getting done slower than in my original way where I just did everything from start to finish. So we call the amount of time from start to finish latency. So when I ask you about what the latency of something is, that's the amount of time from when I start something to when I finish it. But that's not actually what we care about when we have two or three loads of laundry to do. We don't care about how long it takes me to do each load. We care about the latency of the thing overall. We don't care about how long it takes an individual load. You're probably not going to stop in the middle and take out some clothes. You're going to wait until everything gets done. Usually what you're doing. So we care about what we call the throughput, which is the rate at which we complete things. So the throughput in this case is the time in between which we finish loads. And that's where we have much more efficiency. So previously we were taking like 1.8 hours to effectively do each load. Here we're effectively doing more than 1 hour. Of course, we can't actually do a load of laundry in an hour, but if you're like just looking at what's coming out, you're saying, oh, they're doing a load of laundry an hour, even though each load of laundry definitely takes longer than that. And if you have lots and lots of loads of laundry to do, this is what you care about. You don't care that it takes longer to do each load. You care how much work am I getting done in total? Can I actually do all the loads of laundry I want to do? And when we talk about throughput, we'll usually be measuring that. So you might say here we're doing 1.2 loads per hour. And this is sort of the figure we're going to actually care about in most of the time. Sometimes we might still care about latency. We might care about how long it takes to get a whole thing done from start to finish. We'll see some situations where that will come up probably next week. But most of the time, when we're talking about efficiency, we care about how much work can we get done as far as how much stuff gets completed every time, every unit of time, which is throughput. So I gave you this example of pipelining in this sort of abstract case of dealing with laundry. So we're going to apply that to something more like circuits in a bit. But first, sort of any questions about this idea of throughput and latency and the trade-off we're making here. Okay, so one last remark on throughput then, which is that notice here that the time between starting is the same as the time between finishing, and this is something you can always expect to be true when the system gets going. Like at the beginning, there might be some variation when you're doing this by hand, but once things get going, we want to keep going indefinitely, so if you measure how fast things get done in any step, it's going to be the same. So if you want to look at the throughput, you can say, how fast can I put things into the system? Or how fast are they coming out? It's going to be the same once things get going. Yes, there's something weird that might happen at the beginning and end. But when things are going, which is generally what we're going to care about, that we can just look anywhere in the system and say, how fast are things? And that's going to be our throughput. Because whatever speed we can go at is the speed every component must be going at, because everything has work to do. If it could have work to do. Okay. So we saw this case of pipelining where it's obvious because you do it yourself. You pretty much don't do laundry where you decide, I'm going to let the washer just sit there doing nothing for a long time. And the same sort of circumstance comes up if you look at how a circuit might work. So here I have a very naive circuit to compute A times 3. So I take in a value A, I add it to itself, add the result of that, and get A times 3. Any questions on what this does? And so if we want to use this to do a computation, we put in a value A, let's say 7, and then this adder, once we set its input, once we change its input, it takes some amount of time to stabilize a result, and eventually, sometime later, in this case 50 picoseconds later, it starts outputting a stable result, which is the result of 7 plus 7. And then the second adder, now it has new inputs that are stable, and so once its input changes, it starts changing its output, and that takes some amount of time, in this case 50 picoseconds, and then we get the result we want. And you may notice here that we have this time here during which our second adder is basically doing nothing because it doesn't have its inputs yet. And we have this time here during which our first adder is basically doing nothing except storing the value 14. Now, the only reason we need it to not do anything else is because we need to have that 14 to be input to the second adder. Otherwise, it's not actually doing any useful computation because its inputs aren't changing. And it already computed its output. It's already stable. So that's where we have this opportunity for pipelining. But here, without pipelining, we're taking about 100 picoseconds to produce every result. So if I want to multiply a lot of things times 3, the most I'm going to get done is 10 every nanosecond using this. Because I put in a number, and then I get a result back 100 picoseconds later, then I can put in my next number. So, you know, what it might look like if I do this a lot is I have something like timeline like this. I put in the number, I put in the next number, and so on, basically about every 100 picoseconds, and I get out a result and do something with that. And that's what it looks like. And just like we saw with the laundry, I have all this sort of wasted time where my adders basically aren't doing any work. So I'd like to apply the same principle I applied to the laundry situation and make my adders always be doing work. And the reason that this might be helpful is that I want to get a lot of things multiplied times 3. I don't want to get any particular thing multiplied times 3 fast. I want to get all the things multiplied times 3, as many of them as possible. So I want a timeline that looks something more like this, where I put in a number, we figure out what it is times 2, and then we figure out what it is times 3, and while I'm figuring out what it is times 3, I put in the next number, and so on. And it seems like that we should be able to do this because our adders, you know, aren't actually doing any work in those pieces where we're putting in the second number. The first adder isn't really doing any work. So could we just input things into the circuit that I showed you originally? So this circuit that way? So you're shaking your head. So anyone have a volunteer to explain why that wouldn't work? That's really someone who doesn't usually? Okay. Yeah.
You need registers to store the results of your previous calculations. So then you just get overridden by the new values.
Yeah, so we have this problem. For example, here is most obvious. If I put in a new value at this point, then we're not computing 2a plus a anymore. We're computing 2a plus whatever the new value is. So I need to store the old value in order for the right computation to happen. In order to compute 21 and not 17 plus 14, I need to have a copy of the 7 somewhere. And that needs to be stored somewhere, and the way we know how to store things is with registers. So in order to do this pipelining idea, we need to have some place to keep the values. Previously, we didn't need that because basically, you know, our input was acting as the storage. or the adder's output was acting as the storage for us. Like it had the value there, it was not changing, it was effectively storing it for us, but we can't rely on that if you want to change it and have the adder do other work and use that input for something else. So we need to have a place to keep the old value. So the basic idea of doing pipelining is we're going to take our individual pieces and divide it with registers so we can split things up in time. So what we're going to end up with is that we input 7 here, and then we have a rising edge of the clock and it gets copied to here. And we also have the result of our add stored in this green register here. And then the next rising edge of the clock happens and we're storing our result, our output, in this purple register. And when that second rising edge of the clock happens, we can start doing the computation here on our second input. So the registers control when things actually get to the next part of the pipeline rather than relying on knowing like exactly how long the add takes. The registers control when we actually pass things on to the next adder and let us have a different thing for the first adder and the second adder and control what those are. And this is the basic idea of pipelining a circuit, that we choose the parts we want to do step by step, and we're going to do 2 different steps for 2 different things at the same time, and we separate them with registers so we can pass on the results from the first step to the next step while having the machinery for that first step do it the next computation. So any questions on what I did here? How this actually lets us do, so this timeline down here that I showed you. Yeah?
When you're pipelining, do you have to make sure that every stage finishes before you can pass on resources?
So the question is, do I need to make sure every stage finishes before I pass things on? So the amount of time I give until I have that rising edge of the clock needs to be long enough. So for example, this 14 here, that's in this green register, if I don't wait long enough, it's not going to be there. So I need to do that, and we'll talk a bit about what that means for performance. And in fact, there's a particular thing we need to wait for even beyond that I'm going to get to next. But yes, so we need to worry about having everything finish. So we're going to have the same problem with waste we had with like the dryer. The dryer takes a long time. It's going to affect how long you have to wait. And we're going to have that here, I think, more obviously. Like, for example, this A at T plus 1 register, this register down here, we can figure out that value very fast. But that doesn't mean we can spend less time. That doesn't mean we can move this earlier. Because we need to wait for whatever the output of this register is being used for to finish. So we can't shortcut that. Even though the line from here to here is really fast, we need to worry about the line that goes through the adder.
So do the resources that are in the fast process get released when it finishes?
So what the question is, when do the resources get released? So we change what operation we're doing at every rising edge of the clock. That's all together. So when we advance from having 7 in here to having 14 and 7 in here, that's when we're stepping forward in our pipeline. And that's done based on a clock signal, all in sync. Every step moves forward at once. So we saw our line here. When we advanced here from having 4, 34, and 21, the 4 step went to 8 here immediately at the same time as we had went from 34 to 3 times 17 instead of 2 times 17. So it all happens at the same time, and it needs to, because we need to wait for whatever the slowest component is, just like we need to do with the drawing. That makes sense? Still unclear? Yes?
I might be missing something, but what is
What is T? So the idea is that if T is time, so the idea is that if this is what completes in cycle 0, then this is what completes in cycle 1, this is what completes in cycle 2. So in this case, the 7 here that's in T plus 2 is going to complete in cycle 2. It's current cycle plus 2. And the 17 is going to complete in cycle 3, which is the current cycle plus 2, and so on. That's what the numbering comes from. It's not super important you understand that. What's really important to understand is like how values advance between these registers. Which is why, for example, we had an exam question on that. Because it does come up. Other questions, points of confusion? Yeah.
You say cycle 2 is the first clock cycle, cycle 0 or cycle 1?
So if the 7 occurred, if we got the 7 here in cycle T, then it's going to finish in cycle T plus 2. That's what the parentheses mean. And if we have a 7 here in this register in cycle T, it's going to finish in cycle T plus 1. That's what the numbering means. This is not like a convention you need to know. It's just so I can refer to when things finish and distinguish between our two copies of A, which are from different inputs. Like here we have the old A and the new A, which is something you're going to have in a pipeline. You're going to have copies of multiple things from multiple inputs, just like I have my whites and my colored clothes somewhere in my laundry room at the same time. So I showed you this sort of timing diagram, and I basically sort of assumed that we just need to wait for the adder to finish, and then everything works, and then we step forwards and send the values on to the next cycle. So we just, every time, we wait for all the computations to finish in the current step of the pipeline, then send them on to the next step, so we can move on to the next step while using our previous step's resources to do whatever the next instruction that was input. In this case, the next number to multiply times 3. So you might get this idea that because I told you, hey, adding here, it takes 50 picoseconds for each adder, we're going to take 100 picoseconds. And that's not actually true. And this is going to be one of our problems with pipelining, that is a type of waste that's not from just unevenness, but is from needing to store things. So when I talked about registers, the way our registers work is we have a rising edge of the clock, which it seems like we want to set for every 50 picoseconds if we need to wait 50 picoseconds to get the result of an add. As I told you, at the rising edge of the clock, we start inputting to that adder. Here's the new values to add. And 50 picoseconds later, it's going to start outputting the result, and then we're ready. And that's a very reasonable assumption based on how we've told you how registers work. That basically we've told you that there's this rising as a clock, and instantaneously the register copies its input to its output. But a register is a physical thing, and it's not actually instantaneous. So the register has some amount of tolerance about the timing it needs. So there's some amount of time before the rising edge of the clock during which for a register to operate properly, you must not be changing the input. This means that if the adder's outputting a number, the adder's output better not change, which means it better be finished and its input better not be changing. There's also some amount of time after the rising edge of the clock during which the register will actually change its output. It can't actually instantaneously change the voltage it's outputting. It takes a bit of time to do that, and so that's another thing which is going to prevent us from having this instantaneous. And the amount of time this takes is something I'll call the register delay, the amount of time for both of these processes. And when we're doing a pipeline, we need to have time both for those additions to happen, in the case of this multiply times 3 pipeline, and for the register to actually store the value and output the next value. So you need to add in this register delay. And usually, sort of like in our single cycle processor, this probably wouldn't be significant. Registers are pretty fast compared to all the components we have in a single cycle processor, like memories or a whole register file versus a single register. But we're going to make our pipeline stages short enough that it's going to really matter. So if we, let's say we have a 10 picosecond register delay, then here's what the actual timing for the different parts of this times 3 pipeline. So if we look at this and want to say, how fast is my throughput? How often do I finish things? We can say, well, I need to wait for one register to take in a new value and one addition to finish. That's the sort of amount of time I need to wait for each thing that comes out of the pipeline or each thing I put into the pipeline. I need to wait for that register to be ready and for the addition afterwards to happen to be, give the value to the next register. And I could have drawn this arrow anywhere on this diagram in this case that covers a register and the following add, or the add and the following register. But those are the things that need to have happen every time I advance the pipeline one step and input a new value. So I'm completing one operation every 60 picoseconds. So the time for the add plus the time for the register that feeds the add and takes the result of an add. That gives me about 16 billion operations a second. And you may note that this is, you know, much lower than the latency. Like, if I'm worried about not how much multiplying times 3 am I doing, but I'm worried about I put in 7, when am I getting my answer, that's much longer. If I look at when I'm getting my answer, well, I need to wait 10 plus 50 plus 10 plus 50 plus 10 picoseconds for that, which is considerably longer than my original circuit. I have an extra 30 picoseconds there. But that's worth it, assuming that we really care about how much stuff can I multiply times 3. So any questions about this throughput computation here? Yeah.
Does it depend on the hardware on how fast it takes for a register to store
it? So the question is, does this depend on the hardware? Yes. So all these timing numbers are just made up, and it will depend on every single detail about how things work electrically. So they could be anywhere. I'm not sure these numbers are actually typical. It like depends on how big the transistors are and things like that. Okay. So we see here that we started out with a throughput which was 1 every 100 picoseconds, and now we're up to 1 every 60 picoseconds. So we got faster, but not quite twice as fast, even though we're doing what, you know, might look like naively things twice as fast, but the registers mean it's not actually twice as fast. It's significantly slower. Instead of getting 20 billion, we're getting 16 billion. And that's going to be typical. But, you know, this technique seems like something that we can apply in lots of places and make our circuits much faster. So one question is, so can we do more than this? If 16 billion isn't fast enough, can I do better? And there's not an obvious thing to do here, but let's say I could just divide this into more steps. So this would be like with my laundry example. Let's say I had a first washer and a second washer, and I put my clothes in the first washer, then took them out, put them in the second washer, so I could use the first washer for my next load. You could imagine maybe doing the equivalent of that here by splitting up our adders into two pieces. And the hope is that, you know, we do the first part of the add, we do in 25 picoseconds. Then we do the second part of the add in 25 picoseconds, and we're getting our work done much faster than we were before. Now, it's not clear yet whether we can do this because you don't know how adders work, we don't talk about how adders work, but let's say we can actually split up the ad this way. So we can split it up into a 25 picosecond part and a 25 picosecond part, and we have a register which you said, we're assuming, takes around 10 picoseconds. So if I do this, how much more throughput am I going to get? So what is the throughput now? So this is an exercise. Write down an answer and check with your neighbor. What should be the throughput of this? How much faster did I get than that 16 billion before I split up these adders and said, I'm going to do half of the ad, store the results, then do the other half while I'm adding something else in the first half? Okay, anyone want to say what answer they have? Willing to explain it? No? Yes?
28.
Okay, yeah, that's about what I got. So how did you get that?
Because now, since you split it into two, you have the 25 picosecond instruction plus the 10 second delay, so it's 1/35.
Yeah, so we need to wait for any of these 25 picosecond pieces plus the register either before or after it. That's what we need to wait for. Or you can think of waiting for half of the register before, half after. But that's sort of the thing that needs to happen. The register needs to start outputting a value after getting an input, and then we need to do the computation to get the value ready for the next register. And you can consider that at any step. So I drew the line here, but you could have said, we need to wait for this register to start outputting the value and finish the computation, send it to here, and so on. And you get the same number in this case because we divided things up nice and evenly. So you get about 28 billion operations a second. You note that the ideal here, that if you just said we started with something taking 100 picoseconds, and you said, I'm going to do four of that at once, which is basically what we're doing. We're doing one thing here, 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 and here. We're doing four things at once, but we're not four times faster. Instead, we're a little less than three times faster. And that's because we had this register delay, that we had this extra delay from needing to store values and send them to the next step. That actually required extra hardware, which made things slower because it's not instantaneous, because it's physical, it takes time to do what it does. Yeah?
What determines the length of time of the register delay? If you had more stages, would it be slower?
So the question is, what determines the register delay? So that's just determined by this, what this register is physically. So it's how the register is physically built. It's not determined by what's around it, but just physically how the register works. In this class, we aren't really talking about how you actually build registers. You can take various EE classes to learn that. And they can talk about sort of what you can do physically to change what those delays are. But the main determiner is basically how do the transistors that you're using work. Like it. So as processor designers who aren't really electrical engineers, we're just going to get a register built for us, and we're going to have to deal with whatever delay it has. Yeah?
Yeah, well, it's time, isn't it? 2015, so it'd be 4 over 150, which would give you 1 over 37.
So the question is that if we add up all the time, we get like 150 picoseconds. So that's the latency. So it takes 150 picoseconds for us to input something and get it out. But that's not the rate at which we're going to get things out. So every 35 picoseconds, we can input something new. And we can input the stream of values. And 150 picoseconds later, we'll have a new value coming out every 35. So 35 is the difference between each time when we input a new value or get a new value output. But the actual amount of time we're taking to do a computation, yes, is 150 picoseconds. So 50% slower than when we were only doing one at a time.
My question was just, if you have 150 picoseconds for the whole thing, and you're doing four, it would be 4 over 150, which is not 4 over 35.
Oh, okay, so your question is, doesn't that seem unevenly divided? So there's some trickiness here because I have a register at both ends, but we don't actually care about that for throughput. Like, we kind of take half of each of the register delays effectively because we assume that like the other half of it is built into whatever we're using the register's output for, or whatever's inputting into those registers, like is gonna have, we're gonna pay for that register delay. Okay. So we have this diminishing returns from these register delays. So as we try to do this pipelining more and more aggressively and do things which seem crazy when we have our analogy with like laundry of like having two washers that we only do half the wash with, which might suggest to you that maybe this isn't the best way to do this really fast. You know, we get these diminishing returns because the register delays start really mattering. And you know, you can figure this out systematically. You can say, okay, we started out, we're doing 110 picoseconds per cycle, assuming we need to have a register to store the results. Then we're doing 60, and then if we divide things evenly in three pieces, we got 43 and so on. But at the limit, we still have to pay for this 10 picosecond register delay because those are the registers we've been given. So we're not gonna get anything below 10 picoseconds. No matter, even if we divide our arithmetic somehow up into one picosecond pieces, 100 of them for the values, which is an interesting idea, but it's not clear how you do that. And we can sort of graph this out, that we have, you know, this is our time per something getting completed, depending on how many stages we have. And we can see that we sort of never go below the register delay, and we have this asymptotic effect. We figure out the formula where we get kind of making less and less progress towards that register delay the more stages we add. So adding our first few pipelining stages is really valuable. So we get like 83% speed up, 83% faster for adding our first pipeline stage when we can split things up like this. But when we're adding our 15th, we're getting 2% faster. Probably not worth it. And this is sort of in the ideal case where we divide things up nice and evenly and can make that work. And you can also look at this from a throughput perspective, that there's a throughput, which is what if every stage took the register delay exactly. So that's at 100 for this, because one every 10 picoseconds, that's where that is. And you can see we're getting closer and closer to it, but we're making less and less progress the deeper our pipeline gets. So when we're actually adding pipelining to a circuit, we're going to want to choose a point in this space where we get most of the benefit of pipelining, but we don't make things so complicated, because the work of adding all those additional pipeline stages, you know, even if things go ideally, is probably not worth it. And there's another problem here, which is I sort of assume that I could take this adder and divide it into two pieces. And if you think about doing an add by addition by hand, like schoolbook addition, it's not really obvious where you would split up doing addition into two pieces that are the same size. So probably you can't do that. So let's say, for example, I can't split up this second adder into 25 picoseconds and 25 picoseconds. Let's say instead I split it up into 30 and 20. So that's how long things take. What is my throughput going to be when I do this? So write down an answer, check with your neighbor, see what you say. Anyone want to volunteer an answer? Yeah.
So the answer would be 25 G because it can only be 1/40, which is the longest one.
Okay.
The whole thing can only go as fast as the slowest. Not longest,
the
slowest.
Yeah. So the whole thing can only go as fast as the slowest piece. So in this case, we have to wait 40 picoseconds for this first part of the add and the register following it to do something. That means if we're here, yes, we can complete everything in 35 picoseconds, but we can't actually start outputting a new value yet because the adder, the second adder, isn't ready. It's not ready, we're gonna have to wait. Just like with when we're doing laundry, just because my washer finishes and my dryer's still going, I don't just open the dryer, put the second load in and expect things to work. So here we can't do that. So we're gonna have to wait for the slowest part. We get no benefit from this last section being faster. That's only 30 picoseconds, but we can't take advantage of that because the thing that's feeding it is slower. It's not gonna work. It doesn't matter that it finishes faster. We can't take advantage of that because each thing we're inputting to it is gonna be separated by 40 picoseconds. And we can't input things faster than 40 picoseconds here because it can't compute that fast. So everything before this needs to slow down. So that means, yeah, we're gonna get 25 billion operations a second. So even worse than before. And this is just because we couldn't quite split up this ad evenly. We weren't quite clever enough to do that. And that's gonna be very common. We usually can't take a circuit and just figure out how to evenly divide it into pieces. So we're usually gonna have to make some compromises where we're not quite even. And even though we did a pretty good job, you know, we're only off by a small portion of the time, which is probably better than you could actually do in reality with a simple adder like this. We actually still had a big disadvantage. We went down 3 billion operations a second, pretty significant amount. And this is something which typically happens when you try to take an arbitrary circuit and split it up, that in addition to having the diminishing returns because that register delay becomes more and more of the time you're waiting for each time you put something in, you end up not dividing up the logic evenly. So you might take your 100 picoseconds of logic and divide it up into 60 and 45, you know, because you didn't manage to figure out a place to split everything quite evenly. That's a pretty common thing to happen. And that's going to compound with our register delay to give us less and less actual return from pipelining. So any questions about this sort of diminishing returns of pipelining before we move on to talking about how pipelining actually fits with what we talked about earlier, namely our processor? Okay, so not yet. So you may remember that we talked about our textbook's idea of stages. And pipelining is the real reason that these exist. Like I told you, this is just conceptual when we're talking about our single cycle processor. It's not the actual order things happen. But the reason our textbook actually did this and did this particular division of things into stages, why they made the choices they did about having like fetch include splitting out the part of any instructions and finding the address of the next instruction. Why things were divided that way is because this is a way to pipeline the processor. So now we're going to take our single cycle processor and convert these conceptual stages, you know, which were conceptual because all the writes, the memory writes, the write back to the register file and the PC update all actually only happened at the end of the clock cycle, all at the same time. Everything else happened during it. This wasn't the actual order things happen. We're going to change this and make it the order things happen by making these pipeline stages instead. So rather than having everything happen in a cycle, we're going to do each step one cycle at a time for an instruction and have multiple instructions in the pipeline. And to do this, we're going to first do an important reorganization. So our textbook started out by having PC update being the last step, which makes sense when you're sort of computing by hand what an instruction does. But for a pipeline, that's not what you want to do. After I fetch an instruction, I want to immediately, in the next clock cycle, fetch the next instruction, which means I want my first stage to actually compute the next instruction to fetch. So we're going to merge PC update with fetch. So with this idea, we're going to fetch an instruction, then we're going to read the register file for the instruction while we're fetching the following instruction. Then we're going to do the arithmetic for the instruction we just fetched the register file for, from the register file for, while we're reading the register file for the instruction after it, while we're fetching the instruction after that, and so on. So we're going to be executing different parts of five instructions. And the write back stage will contain the least recent instruction, the one that should finish first. And the fetch stage will contain the most recent instruction, the one that should finish last. And the hope here is that by dividing our single cycle processor this way, that we'll have a processor which is about 5 times faster. Because we divided it into 5 pieces. Hopefully those pieces are approximately the same amount of time. And as far as how fast we're actually finishing instructions, which is usually what you care about, we're doing about five times as many instructions any time you would measure. So each of the individual instructions is actually taking longer because we have those register delays at the least. Also because probably all these stages don't take the exact same amount of time. We have some unevenness, like maybe the data memory is slower than the ALU, and that might make all our pipeline stages slower and make the whole latency higher. But overall, we'll get more work done per unit time, even though each instruction is going to take longer to get through the pipeline. We'll have more instructions going into the pipeline and coming out, because we're fetching a new one every cycle, and we're writing the results for a new one every cycle. So any overall questions about this idea, I'm going to move on to an example with, which is simpler than this, to sort of show what this looks like as far as sort of our pictures of the processor. Okay. So I'm going to start with our add-only CPU. This is a simpler thing. We're going to add pipelining to this. So eventually we're going to want to add pipelining to our full, really complicated CPU with all the muxes to choose ALU inputs and all that. But for now, we're going to just have our CPU, which only does additions, and we're going to make it into a pipeline processor. So we have our stages, and those are the stages we're going to use. We don't have a memory stage in this case because there's no data memory in this processor because there's no way of accessing it if you only execute adds. So I'm going to mark out the regions of this processor picture that are each stage. And the basic idea with pipelining is we put registers in between each of these because we want to store the output of one stage and wait before we send it to the next stage. So each stage can execute the whole thing, figure out its results, and then we send it new values. Step forward in the pipeline, put new instructions in each stage. So we have a little bit of a problem that we need to solve first. And that's here. So in this picture, we take a value from the instruction memory and just send it to the write back stage. Which means that we're sending the value to the register number to write the same place we're sending the register numbers to read. That's happening at the same time. But when we do our pipelining, we're going to want to have a different instruction in decode and write back. The register number we're writing for write back is going to be different from a different instruction than the register numbers we're reading. Because we're going to have, if this is instruction 1 in write back, then instruction 2 is in execute, instruction 3 is in decode. They're different instructions, they're going to have different register numbers. And in order to decide what register we write, we want it to be the same register we just executed. So we need to get the number of that register, needs to go through the same number of steps as the value we're getting from the adder. Same number of steps as the actual instruction we're trying to run. So I'm going to rewire things, make this really convoluted path that goes through each stage to pass this register number to write. And the reason I'm doing this is so I can follow this rule that we're always passing values from one stage of our pipeline to the next without skipping. So if I need a value in writeback that we figure out in fetch, I'm going to pass it two to the code stage, to the execute stage. I'm never going to skip a step because every clock cycle I am only going to pass values on to the next stage, not to a later stage. If I want to go get a value from fetch to writeback, it needs to go through each step. Otherwise, we're going to have values from one instruction mixed with values from another, which is not something we want to do. Okay. So I have this divided into stages, and I also have it set up so that all my connections go from one stage to the next stage. There's no case where my connections go from one stage and skip ahead a couple stages, or go backwards. All from one stage to the next stage. And after I do that, I'm going to insert registers between each of these stages. So this is where I'm going to wait for the value to be finished and send the values for the instruction you're supposed to be executing. So for example, these registers here before the decode stage will be outputting the register numbers of the instruction that we're reading registers for, while the registers before the execute stage will be the information for whatever instruction we're doing addition for, which will be the one which came before it in the program. Yes?
So can we always just put registers going from wires that we're taking output?
So the question is, do we just always put registers? Yeah, so the idea is you look at where the stages divide, and you just always put registers. to a first approximation, there are going to be some exceptions. The big one is control flow. For control flow, we sometimes want to change like what the PC does in a future instruction, and that's going to be different because we're communicating between instructions. But when we're doing something for a single instruction, there's going to be registers between every stage, as long as it's all work related to one instruction, when it's not something like passing condition codes or something like that. Okay. So I'm going to label each of these banks of registers based on the stages they divide. So we have our fetch decode registers, which take input from fetch and send output to decode. We have our decode execute registers, which take input from decode, send output to execute. And we have our execute write back registers, not memory because there's no memory stage, which take input from execute and send output to the write back stage. So any questions on these registers I added and why I'm naming them the way I am? So there's one other thing I will label as kind of a pipeline register, and this is kind of one of those weird cases where we're not quite following that rule. This is our PC register. And you can think of the PC register as a register between a fetch stage and the fetch stage. It's how we communicate from one fetch stage to the next cycle's fetch stage. We're telling it what the instruction to run is. And this doesn't follow the rule that we go to the next step because we deliberately want to influence a different instruction. We're using our current instruction to tell what the next instruction should do. And that's why it doesn't go from one stage to the next, it goes from fetch to fetch. So let's look at what this pipeline will do for this very simple program. So we have add R8, R9, add R10, R11. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to put the first add instruction into this pipeline, so it's going to be our PC. So we're going to send the address of 1 out of the PC. That's what the PC is going to say. And that's going to cause the instruction memory to actually fetch instruction 1. And we're going to get the values from that instruction, which are the register numbers 8 and 9. And those are going to be the inputs to the fetch decode register. So we haven't actually done anything with the register file yet, but we figured out the values that we're going to pass to read. And we have them waiting on these registers for the next clock cycle. So in this first cycle, all the work we're doing is reading the instruction memory and taking the values out and getting them ready to put in registers. So at the same time, we compute the address of the next instruction, the address of this R10, R11, and that's the input to our PC register. Okay, right. That's a little confusing. So then during the next cycle, these values we input here, the R8 and R9, are going to be output by the decode into the decode stage, and we'll actually read those register numbers. At the same time, we're going to be reading the next instruction. So while we're reading R8 and R9, we're outputting those into source A and source B. We're reading add R10, R11, and inputting them, getting them ready for the next cycle. So then, after that, we're going to have R10 and R11 into code, and we're going to actually do the computation for the first add. So we'll have read in the previous cycle the values of R8 and R9. And we can send them to the adder and have them waiting for the write back stage. And while that's happening, we're going to read R10 and R11 in the register file. And those values will be waiting on the inputs to the decode execute registers. So this makes sense. Confusion? Yeah.
For the decode execute, is it just register number 9 or is it gate?
So the question is, what are the values here? Is this just register 9? So this is the value we eventually need to pass to Desti. So the only thing we actually need to pass is register 9. Because that's going to be needed later, and that's passed. So we take register 9, we have it in this RB register, it gets passed through to here. Then during the next cycle, it goes into the input to the write-back stage, and then it's used to actually write to the register file. So we don't need R8 because we don't actually use that register number again, and that's why I didn't draw it. I mean, we could have passed it through, but we'd have nothing to do with it. Yes?
To be clear, when you highlight one of the register banks and label it, that means that the output of the highlighted registers is the label, right? Not the input.
When I highlight, that's the output in this case, yes.
Okay.
I should have drawn this on the other side, but it needs to be on this side of the register to have room. Yes. Yeah, so here, so it's the output. So here we are outputting 8 and 9 while we're reading something. Here we're inputting 8 and 9 via the split. I'm sorry that wasn't as clear as it should have been. Well, we're inputting the address of 2 to the PC. And here we're outputting 10 and 11, well, we're outputting 9 and the values of R8 and R9. So we move in lockstep to the next set of registers until we're done. I don't show the last step, but later on, we'll have the value to be stored in R9 and 9, while we have 11 and the values to add for instruction 2. Okay. Any more questions on this? I know some people look confused. Okay. So this is the idea of pipelining, and we're going to do the same thing to our whole single cycle processor eventually. The idea is we figure out where we're dividing things into stages. In our textbooks, I've given us a choice that the textbook authors made on what stages to use. We make sure we pass values from one stage to the next, not skipping any steps, and we just store values in registers to pass them to stages. So we can have one stage doing one instruction while another stage does, then the other stage does. The registers sort of act as a buffer so we don't get confused about what instruction we're working on. Yeah?
What if you wanted to use the result of R9 matic to R11? Like it wouldn't be done?
So the question is, these instructions don't use any common registers. What if we added R9 to R11 instead of R10? Would we have a problem? And the answer is yes. And we'll talk about what to do about that probably on Tuesday. But yes, there is a problem here that if these instructions depend on each other, which we are not dealing with yet. So I'd like to talk about sort of performance. So we talked about how the slowest path is what determines performance. And we saw that in some simple cases where I divided up the adder unevenly, and the slowest division I had is what determined how long the cycle is. And this occurs in general. And we're going to talk about paths in the sense of everything that goes from state, like a register, to a state input, like a register input or a memory write input. That needs to finish in a clock cycle because we have the rising edge of the clock. Things need to be stable in time. And the output needs to go from the register, which changes, and all the computations need to happen so the input is ready. So every path we can draw needs to actually finish. And we're going to have this term called critical path, which is our name, going to be a name for the slowest path through a complicated circuit. And this matters with or without pipelining. This is how we know how long is our clock cycle going to be. So we kind of glossed over that. But you know, in our single cycle processor, if you want to know how long is the clock cycle, we're going to look at what's the slowest path, what's the critical path through our processor. And there's lots of paths we can consider. So here's our sequential processor picture. So there's one path that maybe takes 25 picoseconds. We take the PC, compute its new value. There's another path. We read from the instruction memory and compute a value, let's say. Maybe another path where we read from the instruction memory, then send the value we read through the register file to read a register, then do some addition on the register. And we have sort of our worst case where we read from the instruction memory, use that to read from the register file, use that to do a computation in the ALU, then use that to access the data memory, then store that in the register file. And all of these things need to finish in one clock cycle. So all these paths need to, we need to have the values propagate, all the computations happen, all the things read from memory or the register file that needs to happen in the clock cycle, and whichever path is slowest is going to determine what our clock cycle is. And this holds true, you know, in general. So when we're figuring out what our cycle time is for this circuit, when we have our single cycle processor, we want to say, how fast can I make this? We're going to enumerate all the possible paths, which I haven't shown you all of them, figure out how long each of them takes to have a value propagate safely and actually finish the computation, take the slowest one, that's our clock cycle. That's something that processor designers will do. And we can do the same exercise for this simple sequential circuit. So we have, you know, several paths, and we just say whatever of these is slowest is our cycle time. So we need to measure the time somehow. I'm not telling you how you do that. We'll tell you some amount of time, but that's electrical engineering, how you measure how long it would need. But given some component, if we told you how long it is, you can figure out, based on the worst case, what your cycle time needs to be. And we're going to do the same analysis for a pipeline circuit. But the difference is that our paths come from something which, you know, outputs a value when the clock cycle starts to something which needs an input before the rising edge. So in this case, it goes from one, usually most of the paths are from one pipeline register to another. Some of them are from a pipeline register to the register file input, and so on. But we just take whatever the worst of all those paths are, is our cycle time. And this is how it's going to come up, whether we split things unevenly or not. That will have, it will depend on just what's the least efficient thing. At any stage of the pipeline is going to determine our cycle time. And you may notice that we often have two things happening at once. So for example, here, we're adding two to the PC at the same time we do this instruction memory read. So we don't like add up the amount of time it takes to add to the PC and do the instruction memory read, because they can happen in parallel. What we care about is which of them is slowest. That's going to determine how long that stage takes. And if it's the slowest stage, that's going to determine our cycle time. But we just need, each of these paths need to actually finish in a clock cycle. And that determines how much benefit we're actually getting from pipelining. Any questions on critical paths? Okay. Okay, so here's another version of the picture of where things are in the ADQ processor. That maybe is clearer. So here I've just written down what each register is outputting. That's another view of that. So if we have these instructions, they each go through stage by stage. So the amount of time the instruction takes to complete, it has to finish each stage. And while we're outputting the values for one instruction, from the code execute, we have the next instruction and fetch to code, and so on. Okay. So since we know what's going on in this add processor, let's say, I tell you these performance numbers, and then you need to figure out how fast is it. So here I've told you, for example, that adding two takes 80 picoseconds. That means the path from the PC to the PC is 80 picoseconds, because it has just adding two on it. I tell you the instruction memory takes 200 picoseconds. That means the path from the PC to the instruction memory, and we assume splitting doesn't take any time since it's just separating wires. So the path from the PC to these pipeline registers takes 200 picoseconds. And we give you all these times, how much time it takes to read a value from the register file, and so on. So without pipelining, what you're going to do is you're going to find the critical path here. So the critical path isn't adding these all up, because I don't need to add two on the critical path. That's not the longest thing to do. The longest path through here is from the PC through the instruction memory, through the register file, through the adder, into the register file again. That's the longest path. Even though there's other paths, other things which take time, they can happen in parallel. So if there's no pipelining, I get one instruction every 500 picoseconds. And with these timings, with pipelining, I need to look at what's the worst path again. And that's going to be the instruction memory from PC to this pipeline register. That is the worst path. There's other things we need to do, but they're all faster. So all the other paths from a register to a register, or some memories that we're storing things in, or registers we're storing things in, are faster than that. So it's 200 picoseconds plus our pipeline register delay. I didn't include that in these numbers. So questions on this? Yeah. Yes, so the latency, on the other hand, is 800, because we need to wait for four whole cycles to complete, because we're only advancing when all of the stage is done. All the stages are done. We don't advance any faster than that. We can't, because we need to wait to have something to feed to the next one. We're going to either be waiting in line, or we're going to be waiting for the previous stage to be ready to give us a value. Yeah. Why no pipeline is 500 PS? That's the critical path that's adding up the instruction memory, plus the register file read, plus the add, plus the register file write. The add two doesn't matter, because that's not on the critical path. We can do the addition of two while we're reading the instruction memory. It's not 500? Then I can't add. Okay, so it's 450, isn't it? 550, yep, can't add. Okay, I changed these numbers at some point for this reason, and didn't update that slide. So here's in our last 2 minutes. So let's say I double the speed of the instruction memory. How much am I going to improve throughput of our pipeline processor? Thank you. Okay, anyone, since we're out of time, anyone have an answer they want to explain, or?
Oh my gosh, B is the answer.
B?
Yes.
So what was the logic there?
Because originally it's going to be 200 picoseconds plus 10 with the register delay. When we double it, it's going to be 100 plus 10. So I did 200 turnover.
Okay, so you would get B if you thought, okay, it was 200 was the slowest before, and now we have that. But we have this problem here, which is that the register file is slower than our new instruction memory. This is something which commonly comes up in pipelining. You improve one part, and now you're playing a game of whack-a-mole. That you've gotten one thing faster, and now the other thing matters. So in this case, it's the speed of the register file, plus, which is 125 picoseconds, plus 10 for the register delay before it. That's going to actually determine our actual improvement. And it's going to be less than the sort of doubling of performance you might expect, because we double the speed of the slowest component. Okay, so that's all I have for today. So remember about the homework. Free quiz for next week.
There's no post quiz.
There's no post quiz for this week.